Hello, welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. I'm Andrew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steve. Wait, what?
I thought I'd get away with it.
And I'm Steve.
You can find us on weeklygeekspeak.com, Facebook, Weekly Geek Speak, Twitter, Weekly Geek Speak. Download us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podcast Land. Oh, what wonderful places we can go.
Oh, the places you'll go.
All the Weekly Geekly places. I hope you're all well, listeners.
I've been thinking, by the way. Do you know, like, various podcasts or bands, like, they're the something, whatever their name is. Are we the Wheat Geeks? Are we, like...
Oh,
we're the Gooses, yeah, the Goose the Trainers.
We're the Butt Sharks.
So, like, we're the Speak Geeks, but we talk, like...
I prefer Speak Geeks does to Wheat Geeks.
Speak Geeks.
But I like Wheat Geeks because it's almost like a double meaning.
Yes, so speak how pathetic we are. Speak Easy Geeks.
That makes us sound cool.
We'll work on it.
The Sleazy Geeks.
Oh.
The Sleeks.
The Sleeks. Oh.
The
Sleeks.
Like
and like Weekly Geeks speak.
I like that.
Anyway, yes, welcome to the show. We will be talking Miyazaki today.
Miyazaki!
We will be reviewing X-Men Days of Futures Past. Now, we made a vow not long ago when we watched Frozen for the 44th time that we wouldn't do Frozen, but... Our birthday.
But a week later.
The first chance since that vow.
Oh, yep. No.
Cool.
Idina Menzel. Menzel.
Yeah.
It's a wickedly talented. If you're John Travolta. Idina Menzel, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Rachel's mum in Glee.
Rachel's mum in Glee. I didn't know that because I don't watch Glee. But she is the lady who sings the songy songs in that we won't sing, will we?
No.
I do have a question, though.
What?
Go on.
Oh, no.
Do you...
Do I...
Want to...
What?
Build a snowman?
What are you referencing?
I don't know.
Could you possibly be talking about...
There's something, isn't there?
Ride a bike around the halls?
Don't tempt. He's playing with a bee. He's poking the bear.
He is. Tickling the badger.
I refuse to sing more Frozen.
Well, you should. Well, welcome to the show. We won't force you to listen to us singing or
yet.
Me singing again. These two are worse, to be fair. But, we like to do a little thing, though, at the start of the shows, every other show, which is called Open Forum, where we talk about things that we normally wouldn't talk about. Steve is drawing what the start of what looks like a racist face on his knee.
Are you drawing a swastika on your knee?
It's a line.
At the minute, but that could easily be a swastika.
Right, just carry on, Art Attack.
Just carry on.
Tell someone's attention.
I'm intrigued what you mean.
Anyway, while he draws on his knee...
It's a semicircle.
Okay. Is it going to grow throughout the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I doodle and listen, that's what I'm doing.
You don't listen, though, because you'll go, what?
I won't.
What happened?
12.
Welcome to Weekly Geek Speak. We'll be talking about loads of stuff. We do open forum. We've kind of completely lost the track now after that. Thanks, Steve, with your knee doodles.
We were about to commence open
forum. Open forum, yeah. You take over. You tell us what it is.
It is every 2 weeks when we feel like we can't do a recommend, we have an open forum. We can bring anything to the table we like that may have not come up otherwise. So what would you like to talk about, Steve?
Me?
Apart You've been given it first, yeah.
Well, yes. State of mind. Yeah, I need to find it. Talk amongst yourselves.
It's hard when we haven't even started, Steve, to talk amongst yourselves when you're not ready. he's desperately looking for
You knew this
notepad.
Section was coming up.
I know, and I was doodling on my knee.
But don't you know what it vaguely is? While you're
right, shall I go?
Andrew, go, because...
I like him struggling.
You're going to make him squirm.
You're going to make me squirm. Right, well...
Do you not do your
I
notes
can't even
in order?
Find it. Yeah. But I've skipped a page and that's thrown me.
But then that's one page that you've skipped.
Mm. There we go.
Okay. Oh, he's right. Had it. And he had the quickest look in the world, and then yeah. Shut it.
Because I needed to check a fact.
Sounds about right.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry, Steve. Go on. Fine. No, go on.
Right, it's a weird... It's again, I always bring odd things, because that's how my brain works, and I just think of it. So, last night, we've talked sort of biopics and that kind of thing, and documentaries. Last night, I watched Katy Perry's Part of Me.
I've also watched Katy Perry's Part of Me.
It happened, and I feel sad now. I've liked most of her songs. And I think she's got one of the most pretty faces. But for some reason, makes her quite bland. But
that's my view on Katy Perry, everyone. Enjoy that.
End of open forum, Andrew.
Yeah, so you watched Katy Perry.
So I watched Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer, or whatever the fuck it was called, and I just wanted something stupid. And I scrolled past it so many times on Netflix and gone, go on, I genuinely just, I'll put it on because I'm going to half watch it.
Yeah, we know. You had some teenage dreams.
Last Friday night.
Yeah, you watched it, yeah. You were wide awake.
Yeah, yeah. How's a firework?
You went off like a firework.
Yeah.
So
I can't think of any of the songs.
I kissed a girl. Did you kiss
your knob?
Carry on.
And he liked it.
I was watching that, and it genuinely comes across as a really nice person, and it was quite an interesting little, like, she grew up with...
You heard about a cat?
What?
A cat's called Katy Perry.
Nice.
Which is true. I think that's funny.
Yeah, I like that. But she came across as really nice and really sort of... It just showed the sort of work that goes into her shows.
You know, it's funny. I was just like, about to say to you, she would though, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
But I watched Beyonce do this the same thing, yeah. And she came off a proper dick. You know?
Yeah,
right.
She's like obsessed. She's always walking around with a laptop filming and stuff. Like, just go away, you horrible woman.
Really?
It was Katy Perry. That's pretty nice.
Yeah. So she grew up with really religious parents, and sort of broke out of that. She started gospel singing. But it's just kind of a really nice look at her, and it's like a positive a positive sort of. Role model.
Yeah.
And that was my point. My point is, there's a lot of these sort of things I've got.
Come on.
No.
You're sorry. Doing well there.
And it's sort of positive role model. And there's a lot of these things. I mean, One Direction did it. Justin Bieber's done it. Like, Beyonce's done it. It's one of these weird sort of... Do they always come across as nice? And...
Is she a positive role model?
Well, her background and her upbringing... The stuff that she's sort of...
But from her music videos?
Nah, I suppose.
You're going to eat your heart out like Jeffrey Dahmer is a line from a song. Hey kids, check her out.
I forgot about that.
She struts around in clothes that most people who have an issue with that kind of... I don't.
No one should have a musician or a sports star who's a role model for morals.
Hannah Montana was pitched as a model for children, you know, a role model, and look at her now. All the kids are fucking throwing their legs in the air and shoving bananas at their arses or whatever she does.
Batman was my role model, and look how I turned out. Beat people up at night.
Anyway.
But yeah, it's just that sort of... These weird concert video things that we're getting. We had the Glee 3D one. Mm-hmm. It's all these weird... It's just a really odd film genre, but I liked the documentary, the concept of doing a 3D concert documentary, but this was more about her, whereas the other ones apparently are just concerts.
Well, they're not
in
new.
3D, and it's just a strange...
They started popping up in the 60s, people like following Bob Dylan documentaries and Stones, and there's some good ones out there. But now they've got an audience, and it's another thing to sell to that audience, isn't it? And I watched a bit of Katy Perry's Part of Me. But what really amuses me is at the beginning, when it's loads of webcam of fans explaining
fans
why they love Katy Perry. Honestly, if you cut out all the times we reference Katy Perry and they were talking, you'd think they were talking about Jesus. Like the level of devotion and love
peculiar.
And how much they make out they've changed their life. And it's like, she sings
really?
Like
yeah.
inane pop songs. Like, she can't have changed her life that much. Like, I don't get
it's an
Did you have any obsessive loves of anyone when you were younger? Like no. Either a massive crush or obsessive obsession?
No.
Not obsessive, but like I've mentioned before, Claire Danes, My So-Called Life.
Hmm.
I wrote to the fan club because it was in the back.
You wrote to a fan club?
Yeah.
That's adorable.
And it was in the back of a magazine when you used to have to get the P.O. box address and write a little letter. I remember doing that. But
in
other than
blood.
That, yeah, in blood.
You will be mine.
One day. That's why I never heard back.
Oh,
I did put my return envelope with Staten
Island. You heard back, though, but it was the police, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember.
Like, who? Yes.
The post, like, who, what posters were on your wall, like, when you were young?
Growing up, what did we have? I had Bjork. I had a photo of Bjork. Uma Thurman. What about you?
Ages, I was Star Trek obsessed, so that was Seven of Nine, yeah. And then just Star Trek posters and things. I had a massive poster of Worf for a while. Then I got a bit older into my teenage years, and it was very much, there was like, I had a Ghost in the Shell poster, actually. Angelina Jolie, Tomb Raider. Angelina Jolie was
yeah.
I just loved her legs off. And
that poster saw some action.
Yeah. I had a poster for the film, a bizarre one, The Relic, which is on the wall, because I just liked the poster, but The Relic, the film's actually not very good.
Mm.
It's a good monster, but you do actually only see that for about 6 minutes, I think, in the whole thing. I had loads. It's a Hellraiser.
Mm.
Posters were a huge part. There were a while when my mate was into Nutston Zoo magazine, and then he used to give me all his spare posters, and I put them up, but it never felt right. So they didn't last very long. They were replaced with something nerdy. Like,
I remember saving the cereal box tops off Frosties and saving up for a big... it's a massive, like, full-size poster of Jet from Gladiators.
Mm.
And it's in 3D. So you put it in all the backgrounds in 3D and you put it on and it's, like, 3D. Mm. And I found that the other day whilst tidying the house up in a poster tube.
Mm.
So I had that up for ages. 3D Jet.
Jet.
What about you?
If I told you the story of my post-revolution, you'd think I was regressing. Because the first posters I put up were, like, female wrestlers, like the women divas in wrestling.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them were very busty.
I was trying to think of the name. Who was the most famous one? Name a few of the ones from...
Trish Stratus,
that's the one
right.
I always knew. It's just a name I was trying to remember the other day.
So they were the first that went up. And then it became male wrestlers. Just because I realised you can concentrate your sexuality elsewhere, you didn't need it on your walls.
Yeah, to prove it.
So it became like the male wrestlers, and then it became football, and then now it's all comic book and movie posters. But you'd think I'd regressed. You'd think as a kid you'd have comic book movie posters, and then go up to... get into football and wrestling, and then end on girls. But no, I went backwards.
Your question,
fine.
Just to pull you back to square?
It was just sort of that role models and these films that you get with these big icons. So the Justin Bieber one, I can't even imagine, because he's done two or three, hasn't he? And I can't picture what those would be like. And wonder, it's all these weird movies about icons. Like you said, it's been around a while since Bob Dylan, so it was just sort of...
Everyone needs a role model, I guess, but I don't get the sort of feverish obsession.
Yeah.
Like, these girls who seriously, like, if a girl breaks Justin Bieber's heart, we'll send them death threats. I don't get it.
No.
Mm.
And to be that blind to all the, like, horrible stuff Justin Bieber says and does as well.
Mm.
Yeah, how can you...
I don't get that level of devotion, but I was always quite a bright kid, so...
I just think it was nice to see this... genuinely nice story about how she came to be, and it's quite a positive, happy story, and it just reinforced that she is actually really nice. Because sometimes you see people and you think, I bet they're not, and you see an interview where you see something and you go, oh, okay.
Mm.
And obviously editing has a lot to do with it, but you know, you said yourself, Andrew, the Beyonce one was very much her just
the Bouncy Knowles
wandering
one.
Beyonce, sorry.
Bouncy Knowles.
So yeah, it was just a cool. I liked where that went, actually. So it was cool. It's not what I expected at all. It went every which way but loose.
I will go next, because I don't know how I'm going to go with this one myself, actually. It's a bit of a loose one. But I was...
Loose, huh?
I said what you said. But it was about... I remembered, like, I used to... YouTube's evolved, basically. Mm. YouTube was something you'd watch, basically. You've been framed on the internet. And then it's evolved into now... proper channels and people you subscribe to and watch. The first one I remember watching, mainly because of her massive talent, was Miss Hannah Minx, who was the one who did the Japanese J-Wo word, Japanese word. She had great big knowledge.
Was she an asset?
She had two big assets.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Right. Could you name them?
Squidgy and Widgy.
Oh dear.
But she disappeared off the face of the planet. I don't know what happened to her, but there was all this root. Because when I looked, I was like, I haven't heard anything from her anymore. Like, because she got quite huge, and she's doing this Japanese.
Sorry, I can't take anything you say seriously now.
she got quite big, and lots of people like. I don't think anybody actually genuinely watched it for the learning Japanese, but she. Right. But then there was rumours on the internet that she died because the videos just stopped. And there were some pictures of her at a Comic-Con and things, and that was the last thing anyone ever... Apparently she's not died, she's now working, she's an actress doing some B-rate things, but she's totally given up the whole J-Wo Japanese thing just now. But I just thought, it must be so weird, because it must, especially for a girl going into that and then becoming huge... The internet is a horrible place.
Yeah,
we've learned this. It is at times an amazing place, a brilliant place. There's so much good that can come from. But a lot of times,
it's human. It's all the.
But you get people like being on YouTube, especially being vile to people. Yeah. Like you're an ugly cunt. You know.
Cowards who hide behind anonymity, but it's also a source of.
Yeah,
good
but
as
they
well,
say hurtful things, and that is on there. So for a young girl as she was in her 20s, that could have hurt her. But and I can see why someone might give it up. I myself put a Vine up once of me in a wig being stupid, and someone who didn't even know me put a comment of, "When's the baby due?" Because I've got a bit of a paunch. And I thought that was just a horrible thing to put, you know?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't overly offended. I just think, who are just these people?
Like, it's not what they say, it's the intent behind it, or the thought that it angers me.
It's just a.
It's Mark, ignorant, it's mean, and they wouldn't say it in person.
Mm. And Mark touched on this, didn't he, a few weeks ago with the coffee thing. And it's a real shame, but what I really want to focus on, and not on that horrible side of it, is there any like YouTube channels you've really enjoyed? What do you think of YouTube now, and do you think this is a good direction that it's going in?
It's a good distribution channel for independent, essentially, television. A lot of them use a magazine format, but I'm subscribed to many channels for different reasons. But I like WrestleTalk TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's a British-based, dedicated to wrestling news. They do podcasts. It's very much like us, but for wrestling, bigger audience. But I like Game Grumps, which is two guys just playing games together, but they really make me laugh. And I like a lot of the creative, like I like Honest Trailers. And
Honest Trailers is funny.
How It Should Have Ended.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
I like it. When anyone tries anything creative on YouTube, I'm usually trying to catch it. And I follow a lot of official channels, to be honest, like Marvel and Warner Brothers and DC. Because you do get some cool shit for people on YouTube, because studios realise it's a good... audience to hit, the internet audience, and YouTube's one of the main ways to get them, isn't it? And
that's it.
So I watch a lot. Hopefully it can just grow and grow and grow, but the ads and the Google Plus comments, controversy and stuff like this makes me weary, and I do think at some point something might have to rival or take over YouTube, just because sometimes it gets wrestled, like it's a medium, it's an independent medium for fans to be creative, and then suddenly it starts getting policed and controlled and bought, and then it starts getting taken away, and then someone has to take its place, doesn't it? So I'm scared it's going that way, but you gotta love it. I must spend an hour on YouTube every day without thinking about it, really. Do you know what I mean?
Now you can spend evenings on there watching quality and staying not just home footage of someone filming a dog falling down the stairs.
Or trying to recreate Jackass, which it used to be. It was like, here's me doing a silly trick.
Now it's completely changed.
Well,
you can...
where do you watch most of your trailers?
Yeah. Exactly,
it's no longer a cinema, it's on YouTube.
Definitely. I mean, it's been interesting to see, like, I mean, I subscribe to quite a few channels, but it's been really interesting to see Bo Burnham, just a name drop, but he started out and he was just this kid.
So any name drop? I think he was like... Them.
No, yeah.
You do know that.
Throw
right?
a name out there. But he...
Maybe he does know Bo.
Started out, he was 15, he's a kid in his, kid in his attic. Really, really clever word, well-written songs. And little lyric, little sort of clever word plays. And seeing him go from these little YouTube videos to getting hundreds and thousands of subscribers to getting an album on iTunes, to getting a thing, to having done two stand-up DVDs. And he's only, I think he's still only early 20s. So that, it's been really interesting to follow him.
But also,
all the way through.
Do we have
as a kind of
YouTube to blame for Justin Bieber?
Yeah. So it's a weird one.
And Usher, he didn't help.
What have you done?
What have you done? But there's a, there are, there's a lot of good channels out there. There's Hot Pepper Gaming is a good one. People just eat the hottest chili in the world and then try and review a computer game. It's
so
amazing.
It's like if we were like, what's the best podcasts? We'd spit five or six out.
Yeah.
And then slowly this conversation goes on, we want to mention another five or six, and another five or six, and another five.
It's like when you sit around at the end of a night or something, or someone will put a video on and someone else will go, have you seen this one? And you while away a few hours whilst everyone puts on their favourite.
Yeah,
and that's become an evening's entertainment now. Rather than sticking a movie on, it's these short bursts of, that one's funny, oh, this is quite nice, this is quite... And I quite like...
Heavy rain.
I quite like that about YouTube. Oh.
Hopefully that'll pass. In the meantime, let's have... It's the rain, it's coming down. Do you remember that Hilary Duff song? Let the rain fall down. Let it wash away.
I'm sorry, what was Hilary Duff song?
That one.
Well, I'll lend you the album if you want.
Yeah, I'll lend you it.
Metamorphosis.
I know you will. It's time for my open forum. I'm thinking of the day about directors... who you look forward to the next film even like almost without caring when you've become a fan of that director, you've decided you like their work, so it almost doesn't matter to you what they're doing next. You find out and you're intrigued and you watch the trailer, but you're going to watch that next film based on name alone. And I was wondering what your two some names that fits with in terms of, not necessarily your favourites even, because I won't put Tarantino in my top five directors, but I definitely look out for Tarantino films. And, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just wondered also the few names out of you. Well, isn't there any? They might not
big name, Kevin Smith, obviously.
That's a good
always
one.
I'm always intrigued as to what he's going to do next. And
same, actually. Yeah, that's a good shout.
We're a new Richard Iardi. Submarine was great when he announced he was doing another film. It's like, I'm down with that. I'll see it. I'll go and see that. Have any of you seen The Double? No.
Not yet.
I want to.
Yeah. Does look. I've heard good things.
Noboru Iguchi is mine. Who does the insane Japanese
Machine Girl.
The latest one's called Dead Sushi, where sushi comes alive.
Nice.
Toilet of the Dead is one that he's got that's fairly recent that I still haven't seen, actually, but I'm always watching to see what he comes out with. He's not a good director at all, you know. They're stupid, they're kitsch, they're idiotic, but I can't help love them, you know. Same with Astron 6 is another one I always mention, but I've always got my eye open for their work and things.
Yeah.
Then that's with the more niche, smaller group of things, that's what I focus, like, I get excited for. It comes to the bigger ones. I mean, obviously, like, you're always excited about Scorsese and people. I especially those two for me, I think.
Interesting.
Trying to think of anyone else.
Because I just realised they have quite a few, way before Avengers, Joss Whedon, I used to feverishly want to know what he were doing next and stuff. Chris Nolan, I definitely do it for, and Scorsese and the Coens, I do it for to a degree, and Tarantino, I do it for. But then I was like, I do it quite a lot, actually. I'm always curious who's doing what next, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if it was like that for many people, if you sort of subscribe to the auteur theory and go, I just want to see Kevin Smith. Rather than sell the plot, what to them.
I don't know, I think it's a good one, but I think for me, I'm racking my brains. I think mine's more who's in the film, if that makes sense.
You're more actor.
I'm more of a who's in that film.
Most people are like that.
Those are in it. Okay, why have they cast that person?
The amount of time I hear, like, I want to see the next, I'm just chucking a name for the sake, next Will Smith film.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's not made it. But
people it's a Will Smith film. That name's attached to it, so it's there. Yeah.
I've never been like that. I've never been drawn by the actor.
I have actors I really like, but I don't go, I need to see that Jack Nicholson film. I want to see Roman Polanski's Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. Just always been like that. And I get it to a good degree.
It's an interesting one. Definitely one of our listeners can chip in.
Because I've been watching Hollywood's Best Film Directors on Sky Arts. And so each episode they interview one of them. They go through their works that they used to do. And just got me thinking like this. Because a few of them are like, I'm always
intrigued.
So who've
been covered then? Because I thought you were going to say it was some sort of countdown. I was going to ask who was at the top.
They've covered loads of people. Lucas, Michael Mann, John Landis, who haven't they done? It's kind of at that point. Even people like Stephen Fry.
Do they tend to go for the quirky out? Do they touch on the quirky out there ones, or are they mainly big?
Well, they're quite loose. Like Paul Greengrass was one of them, but he's quite recent. Like I won't call people great until you've done five great films. Do you know what I mean? I've got a 5-film rule.
Right.
You've done 5 good films. Do you know what I mean? But it's quite interesting to watch directors talk about their work. So you've just got to be thinking, how many directors do I care about what they're doing next?
Shane Meadows is a great one. Somebody whose films I'll always watch. And every time I hear This Is England is going to do another one, I go, really? But then I go, actually, I'm weirdly excited and I can't wait to see the progression of these characters. And I loved what I did with them and I hope... I don't know what he's going to do next. I still haven't got around to watching Tyrannosaur, but...
That were Pelle Considine, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah.
But that's a great show. I forgot about... Joe Wells, I think, might go for all of us, even if he's not our favourite. Tim Burton.
In a way, you're always curious.
Always curious about the next Burton one.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because we all saw Alice in Wonderland, everyone went, that's a good one.
It's just interesting what directors you follow then, isn't it?
Yeah.
In which you just fly off
and slide by.
And interestingly, to pass perfectly into our next section, someone who I've followed and won't be anymore because he's stopping is Hayao Miyazaki.
Oh.
So how's that for a segue? So we have the last flight of Hayao Miyazaki has just been at the cinema.
Yeah.
It's been and gone. End of an era.
Yeah, in many ways. Yeah.
From the 80s to now, his films have been pleasuring our eyes in a purely innocent way.
Mm.
Yes.
And beautifully innocent, beautifully wonderful children's storytelling. It really feels like fables, real stories being told to you, and it's really nice. All of his films I think are fantastic. What I've done today is I've put together a list of my favourite 5. We'll go over some of the other ones too if we want to, but I think giving him some time on this podcast is
he's important.
He is.
Our first top 5.
First top 5 for we've done lists before.
Yeah,
right? we've done a top.
Oh yeah, I think it should be a thing.
So this is top 5. Let's have a jingle, Steve.
Top 5, top 5. There are only 5.
And we'll have.
There's not 1. There's not 2. There's not 3. That's 5.
Oh! Yeah, that's actually good. You completely redeemed it. Yeah.
Plot twist.
We'll get you in the recording studio. So welcome to Top 5. And we're going to start with it's an early one. It's a Miyazaki... Miyazaki really hit the big time. later, but this came out before, and it's when you did a lot of eco films, you know, there's a lot of, like, Nausicaa of that, Valley of the Wind. It's Laputa, The Castle in the Sky. I don't know if either of you have seen this one. And it's one...
Not to be confused with Howl's Moving Castle.
No.
See, I'm not... I've watched four Miyazaki films. I'm not the biggest expert in the world, so forgive me if I'm lacking in a few. I've not seen it. What's it?
It's... I only saw it recently, actually, and I thought it was just... There's some of them that I haven't seen because I don't think they look very interesting. And then I actually go and I actually tend to love them. Laputa was exactly this. It's the story of a girl who is being held captive on like an airship, and then she jumps out of the airship to escape. Accidentally, she falls off and she falls. Mm. What you think is to her death, because she gets saved by a jewel around her neck, which floats her down, and she ends up in a village, and this young lad finds her and helps her, and then they set off on this journey to find where this necklace is calling her to, but there's this whole group of evil villains trying to get to this necklace and things.
Right.
But it's all about respecting nature, respecting your ecosystem, and don't let man destroy it. It's a message that comes across in many of his films.
It seems to be a recurring theme.
But Laputa is definitely a hidden gem, and I put this one in there because it is, most of the ones I've got on this list are the big ones.
Right.
But he should be known as well for these great little ones that he's done. I'd group that with one I haven't put on is Nausicaa, which is slightly bigger. Lots of people know it because it was one of his first first feature length films. It's dated a little more than the new ones because it was an earlier one, but again, it's got a good eco message in there about understanding and not judging things on.
Bloody loves the earth, doesn't he?
He does. Mm.
Bloody loves it.
We get given by cartoons is this falling in love fairy tales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This, that, and the other.
There's always a comedy side.
And they're like, the planet's fucked, do something.
Yeah. It's basically respect. It's teaching children respect and caring and just think before you do things because this is beautiful. And he really captures like landscapes and environments beautifully.
It just shows you the changing culture, then, doesn't it?
Mm.
We're all about grow up, find someone, be a part of society.
Kiss them, find your man, settle down, live happily ever after.
Mm. Yeah, I'll never find my man.
Vote Cameron. moving on. This is the one that really kicked Miyazaki to the Western audience, and it's Spirited Away.
Yeah. Classic.
What's the story of Spirited Away, Stephen?
You put me on the spot, I like it. Little girl loses her parents.
Her parents get turned into pigs.
And it's basically her journey trying to work out how to turn them back into pigs. Back into humans. Again.
They are the most arsey parents ever.
Yeah, and you're kind of quite glad when they get turned into pigs at the beginning because you're like,
and you kind of go,
actually,
you know what, why didn't you just not bother and just stay in this cool world? But yeah, she goes,
it's quite scary when it happens. But then when she gets to grips with the world, the world's quite fantastical. It's not really that scary, but that initial thing is really like, oh, what am I watching here?
Yeah, what's actually going on?
And dark shadows looming out of the. It's very creepy. And he has a great imagination and great ability to display this fantastic world. You don't see it often. It's such unique imagination,
bringing life to what should be like dreamlike things. Yeah. If you know what I mean, like the figure that rises and slowly meanders, very dreamlike thing. Is that what it's called? No face.
He's great.
Incredibly dreamlike, but he animates it really well, and you almost start believing him. But it's just weird and dreamlike.
It's a world you can buy into without showing you too much of it. Shows you enough to buy into it without labouring a point.
And like setting very shots of just being so far back and taking a little bit of time just to look at that environment, just enjoy it.
You feel like you're getting a peek into an imaginary world, but like it's, I don't know how to explain it.
like people world build and they try and create a real world with an out there imaginative concept. Where it almost seems like an imaginary world, but it has real life concepts to it. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like flipped.
But it is. I mean, animation is a difficult thing. I mean, like Pixar created the world with it, like Toy Stories within that room and that sort of slight universe. Whereas this creates a proper world and universe within, and to animate that as well, not only to make that as a film, but to actually animate it and convey that in an animation is, I think, almost, I want to say cleverer, but I want a better
more
word.
More clever.
It kind of makes it more sort of better than make a film, you go out there, you send someone out to scout out, you find a landscape and you do a beautiful, pretty landscape shot.
Yeah.
To animate that beautiful landscape and convey this world that's in your head, I think so. It's just an amazing, like...
Yeah. Well, this and Howl's Moving Castle, they almost feel dreamlike.
Yeah.
Spirited Away, they're on this weird island and then nothing else matters around that island because it's just sea.
Yeah.
And then when she has to venture out, it turns out the sea isn't that deep, so she can actually walk there and things. And it's very, like, I do feel like she's trapped in her own imagination in that that part.
It's very Alice in Wonderland-y.
It's almost she's been stifled by her parents, you know, and she's angry and sad, and at this point she just disappears into her own head, and she has to fight her way out back, and when she's back she's grateful for it. It's, and as you say, the imagery, the world, the creatures, it's amazing, and again, sweet.
Yeah.
And
it's like a Japanese Lewis Carroll.
Yeah.
It's an interesting that the, obviously the dub and the subtitled versions are slightly different because it loses some of the meaning in the dub.
How does it?
And I think I remember reading some of the imagery and the little backs, like little referring to little folklores and Japanese folk tales that we're never going to have heard of. So they kind of skip over some of that stuff.
But I think you kind of take that from the images as well.
I was going to ask if you're watching it dubs, because I haven't, and I wondered if they were okay or...
Well, I think Studio Ghibli, and they do work with Pixar to do the dubs, is amazing. It's some of the greatest dubbing out there. You don't miss.
No, it's
don't go, God, this is a bad dub, which can ruin films.
Yeah, it can, definitely.
They've done such a great job, and in all of these, you buy into the characters, and you don't lose anything for the dub. Oh, so I haven't seen many of the but you do lose some story points, obviously, translating via culture.
It might be interesting. Visual. So I watch the subtitle ones usually, but.
Yeah, I tend to go with the subtitle ones.
But they do a cracking job with the sound design, actually, to give them a lot of credit.
Because
they do.
Because I think I'd watch a lot more, because, not Phil Stein, I enjoy watching films with subtitles, but I always do think you have to be in a mood.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Whereas when it's dubbed, you're a bit more open, if you know what I mean.
I think, especially with Miyazaki, because the visuals are so spectacular, I think I'm controversially, maybe for some people, I prefer the dubs.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to, you can focus on the,
and they've done such a good job with it, and I love enjoying the sound of the world as well. It works. I mean, I take them both ways, but I always enjoy it dubbed. And there's a certain magic and a familiarity because it's the same company that does the dub. It's got the same feel to it. So.
Yeah, yeah. So you take it both ways.
I take it both ways.
Cool.
Number three is another one that perhaps isn't as big, one of the biggest ones, but one I really love and really fell in love with when I saw it, and it's Kiki's Delivery Service, which is a story of a young witch who leaves home at the age of about 13 and goes off on her broom to find a town, because this is what witch culture tells you to do. You go to a town and you become that town.
I've been a witch, you don't have to tell me.
She finds a town and tries to find a feat and things, and then gets into all kind of like scrapes and things because she's finding herself, and this is a great story of growing up, which is something else he does really well. And the cat is great. It's my favourite.
I've not seen this one.
But again, it's really sweet. But it's not set in as fantastical a world. Mm. It's almost like she's the weird one coming into the world. We are the weird one coming into a fairly normal...
Yeah.
The world feels like in the 20s, but slightly steampunky.
Yeah.
And she just gets on and tries to cope, but she's shy, she's only a young girl trying to cut her way into this world, find a career for herself. What kind of witch is she? And it's a beautiful story. So that's my number three.
Cool.
Number two, you might be able to contribute more on, it is in my top 10 films
ever.
Death Proof?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know he did that.
I didn't know he did that either.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Oh.
Princess Mononoke.
Oh, you're wearing the shirt.
You are wearing the shirt.
I am wearing the shirt. I didn't even think.
You lent me this one, and I really enjoyed it.
It's a story of a... a guy who... From the off, it's quite terrifying. This one's probably the most adult one. Because, and it's more akin to like Lord of the Ringsy fantasy as opposed to children's tales. Or a bridge between. Because it's a lot more sensible and deeper, richer subject matter than some of these other ones. It's environment.
Yeah, I was just about to say...
I'm going to hold my hand up and say I'm going to have to borrow that one, I'm afraid. I haven't seen it.
It's an amazing
it's
film.
It's very environmentally slanted.
Yeah, right. and this guy lives in this village, and one day a beast bursts out. It's covered in worms and stuff, and he touches it and he gets infected by this curse, and he has to go and cure himself by this curse, and this leads him to a town which is mining and the resources from the woods a bit too much.
Right.
And the animals in the woods are getting angry, and these are spirit animals, and there's all these cute little spirit beings as well.
It's like
sprites.
The spirit of life and the forest.
Okay.
You can imagine where it's going.
Yeah. I like this one as well because it doesn't paint the humans as bad, just
ignorant.
Right.
And then they have to learn via the nature and work to work with nature, because once they go too far, it starts to bite them back, and they have to.
Yeah, which is
work with nature.
You can imagine the real life parallels to that.
Yeah.
It's visually astounding.
It's really strong.
Some big scenes as well, and there's a lot of his films which are more tranquil and scenic and things. There are some massive sequences in this film. The boars escaping things
and the
wolves are scary. And the Gillian Anderson in the dub as the wolf actually works.
Oh, she the wolf?
Yeah. That's a very motherly figure. Mm. She's got two sons and this Princess Mononoke girl who's been adopted by the wolves into the forest. It's so
that
good. In fact, I want to watch it now.
Does sound good. I'm going to have to borrow that one.
I did like that one.
But as something different and something... Because there's a lot of themes in it about children growing up and stuff. And this one was a bit more adult... In a sense, like it's a bit stronger and it deals with death a lot more. Again, Japanese culture is happy to deal with death in children's. I mean, Lion King does deal with death and things, but
well, that's more death of parents. Mm. It doesn't make you embrace your own. It's more like your parents may die.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The concept of it to you is never.
I find myself getting angry in that film at what happens to this environment, because he really paints the picture well.
Right, it's already...
Yeah.
But at the same time, he doesn't have it black and white, good and evil, it's grey.
Yeah.
In my top 10.
Well, I'm intrigued. If that's in your top 10 and that's at number 2, then wow.
No, it's really good. I remember when he lent it to me, and I go through weird phases when there's a film like that and I do want to watch it, but it goes on the pile. Mm. And then you're mood dependent, aren't you?
Pile.
So even though your pile's in a certain order, you go, I'm not in mood for that, so you go to the third one now.
Mm. I'm the
but
same.
But one day I just put it on and I was like, why have I waited? I'm weird.
Yeah. No, you're not at all. I've done the same. How long have I had Amelie now? And that keeps going. That keeps moving one down
but
the pile. And I know I'm going to love it, but like, I just haven't.
I'm the same. I think it's a human thing.
I think it is.
We're just humans.
Number one. It's in my top 10. Again.
Totoro.
My Neighbour Totoro. The reason I love this one.
Too.
The reason I love this film is it really makes me hark back to my childhood.
I'm sorry, it's so juvenile. I really thought you were going to. It really makes me hard. And I was like, okay.
All right.
Explain.
Oh, this section's all about innocence and how you brought erections to the table.
It's the way you said it.
Put your erections away.
God.
We can sword fight later.
He's still reeling from Batman and The Flash last week.
Still can't get rid of the raging boner.
It's still here.
He won't be gone till September.
My Neighbour Totoro really reminds me of my childhood and running around in imagination.
Yeah.
It tells the story of the father and his two girls go live in the countryside, the mother's in hospital, and these children are trying to
Well, they're just being children, and that's what's glorious about this film. Mm. It's about little children being children, creating worlds, imagining things, and then using their imagination to cope with things is a big thing in here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is set in a real world. The dad goes off to work, they go to school, but then they find this tree spirit called Totoro and his little friends, and it's just so sweet and beautiful and lovely, and so heartbreaking as well. There's a real bit which makes you, because you fall in love with these girls, they're so lovely. And then something horrible happens, and you're like, oh no! And Totoro helps them, and it's just as a comforting film that you just maybe want to watch and just forget everything and just return to your childhood. That's my film,
right.
Totoro.
I've never drawn parallels to you sort of explaining in my head. Bridge to Terabithia.
Mm.
Very, very similar theme. There's two kids that escape to it all, and that's very, like...
Which came
that's
after.
That's very similar. Yeah.
It's weird, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But I've never
makes
drawn
you
those
wonder.
Parallels.
But it's the innocence in there as well. That then also they don't have to tell a story where something massive happens. It's basically a few days in these children's lives. And there is a bit of jeopardy there at the end, but it's not huge. It's not the focus of the film. The focus of the film is growing up and
just having fun,
running and around. And
well, that's the beauty of a lot of his films, is they kind of, they're all for kids. And kids' films, they should teach you a lesson, but they should bring a comfort.
Mm.
And that one does, I think, more than the other two. Mm.
I was going to say teach you a lesson that you don't necessarily know you're learning.
Because I don't think Princess Mononoke comforts you. It just teaches you to respect things. Mm. Whereas Totoro, there's a weird. I can't explain it. it's in tone. It's in story. Mm. I find it comforting in a weird way. It's like a Disney film, even with darker edges.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. If you've never seen it, go see it. I remember when I saw the DVD cover, I was like, "This looks goofy as hell," but actually, it's really sweet, and it makes me want a Totoro to cuddle.
You don't have one.
Oh.
But yeah, that's my Miyazaki nice. Tribute. I love the guy to bits, and his uniqueness, I think, is the main thing. There's nobody out there who does the stuff.
I know you've been a bit debilitated with a back injury, but are you going to try and get to the Wind Rises, or do you think you've missed it?
Unfortunately, the run finished.
Was it that quick?
I was gutted that I couldn't go, and I'd all set to go as well, and I couldn't see it, so I need to see it.
Oh. I'm sure you'll get there.
I'm hoping they'll do another screening at some point.
And just finally on the man, is how many of his pantheon are you yet to see? Is he any big standout that
I've
you've been meaning to get to?
There's one I can't recall the name of because it's Castle of Caligascro or something.
Right.
But I've never been very bothered about that one. It looks a bit weird. Pompoco.
Is that the one with the flying pigs?
Porco Rosso, that one is.
Oh, right.
I'm not sure if that's him, but it is a Ghibli. But yeah, there's some that aren't him, but I've seen a lot of the Studio Ghiblis. So doff my cap to Mr. Miyazaki. You've got two films in my top 10. So.
It's time for a miniature news.
This joke's going on too far.
Well, because it's such a short news, I wanted
you
him
wanted
to pad it out.
Okay.
I was going to let him go for about 5 minutes.
I'm just glancing to you going, please, I'm out of breath, stop me.
I genuinely wanted to see what your breaking point would be. But Andrew's is a lot shorter than yours.
Yeah. One day we'll get there. So some big news has dropped. Edgar Wright has left the Ant-Man project, unfortunately. It's been announced.
I think this is a massive shame. And I think it took... What was exciting about Ant-Man was more Edgar Wright on it, doing a film in his style, with his spin, and his just unique way of making films.
Yeah.
And to have him off it, I just feel like we're going to get another run-of-the-mill superhero film.
He's not the only one to leave either. Drew Goddard, who was meant to direct the pilot and be the main showrunner for Daredevil, has left this same weekend.
And then Joss Whedon tweeted a picture of him holding up a cornetto in defiance, almost supporting Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
I think it's a case of, because the Ant-Man's been in development longer than this cinematic universe has been going on.
Yeah.
And I think they really wanted, they were really pushing the Edgar Wright Ant-Man film because they wanted it to be done and liked it.
Yeah.
But I think what's changed in the meantime is the importance of their universe, and I think trying to reconcile the film they always wanted to make with trying to make it fit with
into the
their strategy, which is all-consuming and important. And I think at the end of the day, Edgar Wright just thought, you know what, I'd rather go away and make my own film.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible shame, but I think I don't think it's necessarily anyone's fault. I think it's just one of those things.
It makes you worry, though, about this massive universe and whether that is becoming too much of a focus, whereas before we had several good, nice films made by directors that, like Jon Favreau and things, that brought their own spin to it. But now it all seems to be gearing into this kind of mass-produced thing. And I'd rather see it as outlets for auteurs to do their bit and then link it in, give them a guideline, but don't control what they have to do, in a way.
No, but I think they're quite good for that, in a way. Like, they let Shane Black change the Mandarin, which was massive, and Winter Soldier was ballsy, and so I think they do that to a degree, but I think they do have a bottom line, and they do have a where does this bleed into the rest sort of thing. And I can't imagine Edgar Wright's ever been in a position he has to compromise much.
No, no, he's not really had to. Everything has been standalone or his. So maybe it's just something he doesn't want to do.
I'm gutted, but I don't see it as Marvel being the bad guy and saying, let's change everything and put Iron Man in it. I think it's just a case of, it's one of the first times Edgar Wright's tried to do a proper... Like, Scott Pilgrim, I know, is not his, and he just came on to direct, but it was still a massive, almost indie film. Like, Universal didn't care, I don't think, much. This is the first time he's been scrutinised for doing a massive blockbuster, and I just don't think he got it all his own way and got frustrated. But to be honest, I'm still excited for Ant-Man, and I'd rather Edgar Wright do something original, so...
Yeah.
I don't think it's end up world, even though it's a shame. Mm.
Yeah, I will miss the snazziness of his style, but definitely. We'll see.
We've got the Batman Superman official movie title.
Which is?
Well, you told me earlier, it's Extreme Penetration.
Yeah.
Yeah, Batman versus Superman, Extreme Penetration.
Because so I wanted to test
how do
you
feel?
I wanted to test if you actually knew it or not. Apparently you don't.
Nope. This is research. This is like we were saying, it's like doing your homework on the bus.
Steve scrolling down his news.
2 seconds before
it's
recording.
It's actually called Batman vs Superman Dawn of Justice.
Okay.
I'll be honest.
It's very clunky.
It's very like these are two key plot points that are going to happen in the story.
Yeah, it's basically this Batman and this Superman, and it's kind of a Justice League prequel. Hope you go get all that.
Yeah, it's in the middle. Batman and Superman might have a fight, but at the end we'll find out that it's the dawn of the Justice League. Thanks.
Cheers.
You know, but Batman versus Superman, at least it had that kind of, well, they're fighting when they sort it out, and even though you obviously as a comic book fan knew they probably were. We know what's going to happen now. I think it's a bit shoddy to me.
And it's also sort of a continuation of a trend I've noticed when no one's happy to just call themselves 4-2. It has to be For the Dark World and Captain America, The Winter Soldier. It's like, it's not Batman vs Superman, it's Batman vs Superman, Dawn of Justice. They all need that Star Wars extra title when it's like...
At least Spider-Man kept his...
Just call it what it is. We know.
It's the second.
Batman, doesn't need... I don't like these... Yeah, the prefix names.
Everyone's going to call it Batman vs Superman forever, because I don't think there'll be a Batman vs Superman 2. It'll be Justice League. Yeah. So just...
If anything, I would have been happier if it was called Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice.
I genuinely think that's a better title, but they want to sell Batman, obviously. Which you could do with that logo.
Yeah, just do... Yeah, exactly.
Everyone will know.
Quite like the logo.
The logo's cool.
Yeah, the logo looked pretty... It's nicely crafted.
I just feel like they're getting a bit enjoying the feverishness of the internet at the moment, and they're just spooning us more and more, and I don't want more. No. Less is more. This is why we're getting excited for Guardians, because less is more. This is why we got excited for, you know, loads of stuff. It's better if you keep stuff, but Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, so we've only recently found out actually what's going to happen in this one through that trailer. You know, I feel like I'm going to walk in and know exactly what's going to happen all the way through.
Yeah, I like a title that's like vague but suggestive, like The Dark Knight Rises.
Mm. For ages in Man of Steel, the only image we had was him standing by a door that was bent, you know?
But Man of Steel and The Dark Knight, they perfectly encapsulate those films and the themes therein. Whereas Batman vs Superman is literally telling you what's going to happen.
Mm.
And Dawn of Justice is literally saying what their plan is. So it's just like, it's like they've tried to be vague and slightly pretentious, but in doing so have tipped their entire hand.
Age of Ultron's before, isn't it? Like, and we don't know much about that. We know Ultron's there.
Yeah.
Not much else.
Yeah. But it's like we've seen Batman now, we've seen the Batmobile, and it's how far off? And we've now seen a picture of Wonder Woman.
No, I think that's all on schedule, to be honest. Because they are shooting now, keep in mind, and everyone's feverishly looking.
But if they're drip-feeding that now... What we're going to have had everything by the time it's
no, but they're shooting it now and everyone's feverishly trying to get a hint of anything. So would you rather them catch Ben Affleck in a bat suit covered by a jacket in a crap image from 30 yards away, or would you rather show him on Front Street what it is so you can get on with shooting?
Yeah. It's a better way, because that's exactly what happened with The Dark Knight Rises. The first thing we saw was Bane and Batman stood fighting outside, that ended up to be one of the last scenes in the film. And that was a bit of shit, you know? Just give the press what they want, and then any of the pictures that they take, they happen to see, nobody's as interested.
Exactly, yeah.
Because we've already done it. Fair enough. Gareth Edwards is to direct the first Star Wars spin-off film. I don't know much about it.
Well, he did a great job on Godzilla, and I hope it doesn't compromise... Because I'd like a Godzilla sequel, frankly, first and foremost.
Right.
But I think he's very kind of Spielbergian, a bit like J.J. Abrams. So if he could do a Boba Fett spin-off film.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Boba Fett.
It's the only one I want. It's the only one I want to know what happened to him.
Yeah.
Because I don't buy. I mean, you said a few weeks ago, the first thing that needs to happen is Boba Fett flies out the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have a deserved ending, but he became a cult figure kind of later on, didn't he? So, I mean, Godzilla was great, but it had its own tone and atmosphere. It definitely wasn't the tone or atmosphere I'd associate with Star Wars.
No.
I'm interested. Label me interested, I guess, yeah. I mean, I'm very, as we've said before on the podcast, we're all quite blasé about this Star Wars. It can't go worse than it already has.
No.
I'm just sat here, like, watching.
Yeah.
Waiting to walk into the theatre.
Seeing what we get, yeah.
I like J.J. Abrams, but to get people like Gareth Edwards on board just for the spin-offs shows a degree of sort of quality control, doesn't it? Because you could easily fob off a spin-off, not give it to one of the hottest new directors because he's just done Godzilla. Do you know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
So, Patrick Stewart returned, Ian McKellen returned, and various other cast members returned. It was time for X-Men Days of Futures Past.
I don't know if you could talk about this film without being a bit spoilerific.
No, fuck it.
No, you've got to be.
So, if you've not seen Days of Future Past...
We'll try our best, but it's going to be difficult.
We won't get into the nitty-gritty of everything, but we're going to...
Touch on
massive hints... Because I don't know how to talk about it without them.
Yeah, it is.
So if you're over cautious, skip ahead until you've watched it, and then come back.
yeah.
Don't leave us completely.
Don't leave us. No, no.
Please don't go.
Well, I'm going to hand the torch of your thoughts over. Well, let's start with Steve, because you're the least of the X-Men fan here, aren't you? You've watched them all once, but many years ago. Yep. You enjoyed First Class, and you're not really that bothered overall.
Yeah.
How did you find Doff?
went in completely open-minded.
X-Men
Doff. Went in open-minded and came out entertained and thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, I'd say, but I'd go 7. I was entertained, enjoyed it. It's a strong 7. I knew what was happening in it. I knew where it was going. A couple of questions I had to ask Andrew afterwards, but that was only because I wasn't quite sure of the X-Men universe, but it made sense in terms of story. But I just had to go.
I'd love to know, but I feel like we're deep well into.
I know. It's like, you know that thing. Oh, that was that, right? Okay, that did make sense then. But yeah, enjoyed it. Looked good.
I not really. Wasn't very blown away, to be honest. I mean, it was pretty much what I was expecting it to be. The futury bits looked like they were filmed in a tiny studio. You didn't really get much of a feel for that world when we were told it had painted a massive picture of what the future's going to be like. And all we got to see is one shot of humanity's been enslaved, and then they ran off to a Chinese temple. Otherwise, when we returned to the first class world, that was more enjoyable. But I just felt like it was doing what it set out to do in too much of an on-the-nose way. I felt like it was an exercise in sorting out the franchise, which is what we thought it would be, and so I can't really complain about that. Wolverine was alright. I quite enjoyed seeing Wolverine again. I haven't seen him for a while. I've watched Wolverine. So to see him trotting around was fine, and he wasn't too overbearing. There seems to be a theme that Magneto comes in and has a strop, and that's it. You know, Charles! But that's what seems to have happened in the past two films. I thought it followed that format a little too closely to First Class, and just didn't have the kind of exciting spice that First Class had in that sense. I enjoyed it. I felt it was a little out of date, but overall, 6 or 7 for me. That's my brief summary of my thoughts. I'm very intrigued to see what Scott thought of it, because you were the most trepidant, weren't you?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and I was, what's a nice way of putting it? I was a bit horrible about the whole thing. But it's because I'm a fan, and it's because I've been burnt too much. But I felt like I was a bit wrong to do so after this film, because I actually really liked it. It is an elaborate exercise in erasing Brett Ratner and that ill-advised first spin-off film. It still suffers from wild inconsistencies and incredible plot holes that really just the entire franchise has just been laden with from day one. And I did want it to be the big send-off, which it not quite is. But I think it's the best X-Men film there's been. Yeah. And I think it's, because the franchise in my mind was dead as anything, and it has kind of breathed a bit of life into it to the point, like I said, I've not walked out of an X-Men film looking forward to the next one since X-Men 2. I'm kind of half looking forward to Apocalypse now, which I really wasn't before.
Okay.
I still think you need to hit that reboot button as soon as that film's finished.
Yeah.
And I do think this is a bit... This in-between hybrid reboot quill has just delayed the inevitable. But I thought it was really quite... Like, massive plot holes, not perfect. A lot of people going overboard with it, because I've heard people genuinely say it's the best superhero film ever made.
Wow, that's a bold claim.
It barely get in my top 10. But I think it's strong, and a franchise I thought was dead as a doornail suddenly got up and moved about a little bit, and whilst it's not singing and dancing, just to get that.
Yeah.
I was really happy about it.
I think James McAvoy did a really good job as well.
Yeah, those two again, him and Fassbender. Fassbender wasn't as strong this time, but those two were good actors.
And Nicholas Holt was good as well.
He just seemed to follow McAvoy around.
But he was, and it's nice to see him in the big. He's done well for himself.
I read a lot about this Pentagon break-in, and I thought that was over in a snap. I mean, you were impressed by it, but I thought it was really meh. Running around like in slow-mo. I feel like I've seen it 10 times.
I really like that scene though.
Because I'd read a lot about that. I said, it's that whole sequence is amazing. And now when I hear sequence, I think about big, long, like Dark Knight-y kind of sequences. And and the let's say the Times Square sequence in Spider-Man was quite long and things. This felt like, oh, we've walked in and then we showcase some Quicksilver and then we're out and that's it, and it just seemed to move to like that for me. I didn't like that. What else didn't I like?
This is how we review things.
Let's go what I did. Like, Jennifer Lawrence was good.
Yeah, she, again, was, she was.
There wasn't much to her story. It was trotting around trying to kill a midget. he was good, actually, Dinklage.
Dinklage is really good. Although Bolivar Trask has been in X-Men before, in X-Men 3, where he's a massive black gentleman.
Really?
Oh.
Just one of the many inconsistencies in the X-Men.
Now he's tiny.
Now he's a tiny white midget.
With an awesome moustache.
Well, Bryan Singer himself said, who notices these things?
You.
Me and everyone else.
This is it, though. I didn't feel it. I felt First Class was a bit better in terms of you did something different. This one seemed to be going, oh, we made First Class, oh, how are we going to sort this out? Yeah. And it wasn't a send-off to those old guys. They just sat in a room. They didn't do anything, you know. They just sat in a room, it felt like. And then there was an end bit where, you know, it's still a bit goofy. I don't know, I'm not sold.
The bits I liked, I thought it was a great sequel to First Class. I thought it was the best way I've seen some of the old guard. I particularly like Blink. Their portal powers.
Oh, that was good.
They were great.
That's what she's called.
I got to see Iceman under a bridge. End of Dates erased two of the worst X-Men things to happen to X-Men ever from existence.
Yeah.
It was an elaborate exercise in doing so.
Definitely. But it did.
But I'm still very happy about it.
Yeah.
And a lot, and at least two or three of the massive inconsistencies that it doesn't really touch on, at least sort of left hints of how I, in my own mind, can write that out. They still take liberties, they still half-arse a few things, and it's far from perfect. But in the day, a film I was really worried about, and I've not, a franchise I've not enjoyed for four or five films now, and thought was dead as a doornail, I thought it were better than Spider-Man 2. And I came out feeling surprised and good about it.
Cool.
So,
I mean, I might sound extremely harsh on it. It was, as I say, 6 or 7. I would put it around the mark of Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm suffering from Godzilla syndrome as well, though, because after you've been seeing a massive spectacle like that, this just felt a bit cheaper. And there were things that were happening in there which I just felt unnecessary, that were showcasing big stuff. I mean, you've seen it in the trailer, a stadium gets lifted up for the most stupid reason I can ever think. It just seems to be visually like, oh, that, oh, they've, they could have done 10 other things to do exactly what the point of that was. I said to Steve, that for me was as stupid as the whole bridge bit in the third one. Just a necessary showcase of hovering around with things, but yeah, it isn't offensive. It's just it didn't impress me as much as I think, more comparing with what we've had so far this year, it didn't stack up to Cap or Godzilla for me.
No,
I've not seen either of those.
But it's way better than I thought it was going to be, and I'm genuinely quite heartened by what it is. I still want it to be rebooted, but I'll now back off for Apocalypse. And then speak up again.
The Sentinels. I didn't like the design of the future Sentinels. They were just a copy of the, kind of a mix of the Thor creature with a face mouth. They looked CGI and horrible as well.
Uber T-1000 destroyers,
And they were a bit better with when they were hovering around in the 70s. But
yeah, they were cool.
They could have gone down a more traditional route with the look of them.
Well, the appeal of the Sentinels for me is giant robots I can see exploding, but they kind of overwhelm the mutants, a bit like zombies in a weird way, if you know what I mean. Where, they can take a few, but eventually they can keep building more and keep building more, and you're going to get cut. I didn't need them to be like unstoppable Uber whatever.
Yeah, I would have much rather seen like a Saint Achilles destroying the X-Men and destroying and destroying and destroying them, but they keep coming. That would have been much more exciting.
Yeah.
You know, old school Sentinels. To say they'd put so much effort in, and they did it with First Class to make the world look like the 70s, make it look like the 60s, and then they actually revealed the Sentinels in the 70s and they looked like they were from the noughties, it didn't... I mean, yeah. I didn't want to see a little 80s robot running around going, hello! But you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They could have made them look a bit more like how army vehicles or something looked in the 70s, as opposed to... Look, we've skipped forward 30 years in terms of technological design.
My biggest gripe is, it'll sound really just nitpicky, and maybe I should just go with it, but the way they sent Wolverine back in time, I don't understand the reasoning, the point, or how... Because they've just literally created a power for someone and then gone, yeah, that's fine. Power that would make more sense if you just gave it to Professor X.
Yeah.
I'd just go along with it.
And then you could say, I can't do it. I can't go back because I'm doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Give Kitty Pryde something.
Yeah. It's just weird. What's he doing? Phasing through time? It bollocks. It's just weird.
Mm.
I just like, really?
Yeah, that was stupid.
It was just too like, oh, she's a mutant, just give her an extra thing. But I don't like that, because she's never had that power ever.
Every time I go through it in my head, there's more and more silly things.
Oh, you could tear it to shreds, but X-Men franchise has been... It's just a lot better than we've been served for years.
Mm.
And it felt like a real return, and you can see... That Singer elevates a lot of the nonsense that Fox bring to it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I still think it needs to be rebooted, but I think it's as good as we're getting from Fox, so I really liked it.
Yeah, I really liked it. There were a couple of bits that bothered me, the bits that were, I mean, we didn't see it in 3D, but they were blatantly just like, that just blatantly shoehorned in and CGI'd a bit of stuff in for the 3D. Mm. There was barely anything noticeably 3D. I think there were three scenes I went... That would be just for the 3D. There's no point to that at all.
I watched it in 3D, and I can't tell you any time I noticed it was 3D.
Do you know, sometimes you can watch a film and not in 3D, and you think, oh, I bet that scene looked amazing in 3D, actually. There wasn't... Nothing stood out other than...
I don't think I noticed I was watching 3D. I know I did, but
that's well, that's not to hear,
good in a way, though, because like Spider-Man, you said you saw that in 3D, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the better ones.
Same with Godzilla in 3D, it works because you get depth more than anything with that, and you get to appreciate the size. And I saw Cap, and that didn't need it. And I think X-Men didn't need it, but there were some things where some steel flew in your face.
Yeah, and it was like it just blatantly looked tacked on at the end. It's like you don't need to show that.
Mm.
We get why he's doing it, but.
Overall, a good effort.
Yeah, I think definitely.
The feel in the room.
Thoroughly entertained. Enjoyed it.
What would you give it out of 10?
A definite 7. As I say, not being a massive fan and not knowing much about the universe, other than the cartoon from years ago, which I have vague memories of, I enjoyed watching. Just a good, strong, entertaining film. Looking forward to the next one. Enjoyed First Class. See where they take it.
And you're 7?
I still have some big problems, but... For the film itself, I think it's a 7, and it fixes more than it wrecks, and that's the first X-Men film I could say it does that. So I was pleased. 7.
6-7 for me, so we've got to round it to a 7 out of 10. You don't think then it's like the when First Class came around, everyone went, oh, that's quite good.
I think it's easily one of the top 2 X-Men films ever made. Mm-hmm. We've seen X2 in this. I would probably just because it's fresher in my mind, I might get an edge now. We'll see where it rests. So I think because of that, it was always going to get good reviews or whatever. But people have gone really overboard online about how good it is.
Mm.
Because it's fun and exciting, and it finally got more right than wrong. And and people fucking love the X-Men. This is why I get so frustrated, because it's potentially the best superhero franchise out there. But it's at the worst studio, and they get it so wrong that it's one of the worst.
And I suppose they showcased a few more different things. I mean, I didn't like the Quicksilver stuff, but it gave them something new. The Blink stuff really worked, and
definitely happier than I were before.
There's a couple of reviews for me on Twitter. At Hollow Spy said, X-Men Days of Future Past, watchable. It's all right. At Popular Outcast, better than expected, 7 out of 10. And at Geek Fantasy Mag said, hashtag improvement, hashtag setup, hashtag plot holes.
You know what? You know what? That's almost perfect. Obviously, they've not quite done the format like we usually do.
But
yeah.
Three words, improvement,
three,
setup,
three
plot
words
holes.
That do sum it up pretty perfectly.
So thank you for those.
Let us know what you thought of it. Did you feel it mended the X-Men trilogy, franchise, or do you love the X-Men anyway and thought it was a good addition, or did you think it was shit? Let us know.
There's only three options.
We've got another game from Steve's Game Pile.
A little game from the Game Pile. So the idea is, take a song. Can be any song.
Take it.
Think about the style, the lyrics, what the song's about. Make it into a film. So, but just because it's a happy, upbeat, yay song, it doesn't mean the film has to be like that. You can turn it on its head and make it.
Then why do I have to think of the style?
You might want to use the style. You might not.
It might give you inspiration.
Might inspire.
I have actually. The film.
Who'd be in the film? What would the film be about? And what genre would it be?
I've actually thought about this before, because there was, in two instances, I was walking home, and I'm like a hummingbird with my thoughts, and sometimes it's like serious life stuff, and then I'm ranking my top five live-action Catwoman, and then I'm thinking about who I'd like to play Doctor Who, then I start thinking about what I'd do if I was Doctor
Who. I want a 24-hour box for your thoughts. Yeah. We spoke about this before.
I'm like a hummingbird.
I want that.
And then I was listening to my iPod, and then I was listening to Laid. James.
Right.
And then I suddenly vividly like listened to the lyrics, and then there was just one lyric, I can't remember quite how it went. You're not even here. And then I just thought of a Sixth Sense like love story.
Okay.
And then there were another one, just squeeze up the junction. Which one was plot, the lyrics just plot lyrics out plot a relationship. Themselves. So that's
nice.
A thing.
Nice. So who'd be in your James adaptation movie?
I wasn't actively going to make
it. Okay. No, I just think so. But
it was just a. It was
can
just
you,
a
could you picture it though? I like.
It was
like
a couple of minute flight of fantasy going. That's a bit like that. That would make an interesting film if anyone ever crafted that.
But if you had to make it, then could you put? Who would you put in it?
him.
Okay. That man.
Justin
with
Long.
The face. Okay.
And whoever would look nice with Justin Long.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. I didn't cast it. I wasn't crafting it to go home and write it. I was just.
No, but
it
I
was just
the
like
idea
a lich. Probably even lasted the length of the song. I just went, oh, that could be a fail. Yeah. Kind of go a bit like that. It kind of, you know.
Okay.
Just I think like that. And then I move on to thinking about like how I design a Terminator. do you have one?
Nice. No, I was going to think of one. No, I haven't thought of one. It was just it was something to throw out there that I was going to work on.
One of my favourite song of all time is "Go Your Own Way" by Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
I think that would make a good film.
Did you sing me 10 seconds of it?
No.
I'm trying to remember how it goes.
You can go your own.
Oh, it's that one.
Go your own way.
Every song.
That one.
Every song I vaguely know, but like don't quite now.
Mm.
It's always Fleetwood Mac. Always.
But yeah, I like that one, and I don't know. I like the idea of a story of I like a love story, and I was thinking about what happens if you fell in love with two people genuinely, and you know, and you don't know, it tears you apart, and you've got to decide, you know. So think of that kind of story of. Because it's never black and white, is it? You know, you always get stories of someone who loves and has an affair, and it's bad, and it's like that. You know, it's why have you fell in love with two people?
It's scary. Why she's a bit of a dick, but the other one's really nice.
Mm.
What if you genuinely were both? What if one was just a lovely man in an Evil Dead T-shirt, and one was just a lovely man in like a Pokemon, maybe like
Pikachu
top? Like, you'd be so torn.
And if I was to cast it, it would be me in the lead role, and then Jane Levy in the other role, and maybe Emma Stone.
Ooh.
Just because I want to be in a film where I get to kiss them both,
Maybe grab a boo.
grab a boo.
No, genuine. I love that song. I love the idea of that, like, exploring and then go your own way. Is the thing is, you can't have both, so he has to have neither. But it's a heartbreaking little tale, and he walks off trying to catch a lift, like at the end of Hulk. No, I don't know. It's a good question.
I like that.
I don't know. But then when I actually think about that premise and that story, I just think Channel 5 afternoon movie.
Well, that's it. Like,
but someone's going to get cancer and die because that's what happened.
When I thought of the Lady one, I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. And I went, there's so many, they're not really there stories. It's just another one. Yeah.
So you had some good ones from...
I had one from technically Ron Aaron at the weekend, who said he'd go for the Pixies, gigantic.
My big, big love.
And he said it'd be a side project based on the Man of Steel or superhero-style film. And it would be two journalists reporting from the ground, from the sidelines, of all the destruction going on around. So the scenes in Man of Steel with all the smashing up and the people dying, they'd just be two reporters down there reporting from the sidelines and the gritty reality and the sort of harsh, and it is gigantic, it's on a big scale and they're reporting on it all, and he'd have Christian Bale and Jessica Chastain in it.
Okay.
And that would be his
good show.
I
was watching
his choice,
the Pixies live on Sky Arts earlier.
They're so
45
good
minutes. I saw it live at V once. It's very good.
Yeah, I saw them at Reading, they were incredible.
Do you have any more shouts, or was that just...
no, that was the one, but yeah. So if you've got any ideas, tweet in.
It's one of those questions, like, we've answered it now, we'll never revisit it. Well, we might do if other people give suggestions.
If people suggest
but it. I know for a fact now, at some point this week, I would listen to a song and go, should have said that
we
one.
We can revisit it, because I haven't thought of one.
Every
it was
time
one of those
hear a song.
I was throwing out there. But
well, next time you're listening to your iPod, and you think of a song and note it down, we'll talk about it.
Yep.
Same with the listeners. Anything on your iPod you're listening to, or suddenly a movie idea comes to your head, get it written down.
Or even if you think of a song and can't think of an idea, send it out there.
Think of a song.
That came out wrong.
We all live on a yellow submarine. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Under my umbrella.
Oh, I wonder.
Film about
what you.
Someone in the way.
So, I don't know if you saw on our website, we had a survey thrown up by watchshop.com all about timey-wimey time travel and fun stuff. We've just reviewed X-Men Days of Futures Past. It was on a couple of minutes ago. You were listening to it. Do you remember?
I don't recall this. Wow. It's because in 5 minutes' time, Steve sends me back to make sure
I
never have.
Oh, I see.
Have
yeah, that hot is time machine is useful. And yeah, you can read the results on our website, but I thought I'd just ask you guys. Like, I don't know if you read the thing I
haven't actually. I'm
good, that works.
No, I haven't either.
In my favour. So yeah, basically, it is a survey of 2,000 UK sci-fi fans, and asked.
I wasn't asked.
No, you weren't one of the lucky few. And what do you think was the favourite time travel franchise or film?
Oh, Back to the Future.
I'd like to say Back to the Future. Yeah.
It was Back to the Future, but not by much.
Really? Terminator would be second.
No, it was
Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. But, sorry, I was just thinking movies, like a myopic man that I am.
But first point went to Back to the Future.
Nice.
What kind of... which was the best time travel device?
TARDIS.
Gotta be
that.
No, DeLorean.
I know, but I think the TARDIS would edge that.
Really?
It's got more character than the DeLorean.
You were both wrong. It was a hot tub time machine.
Knew it. It's obvious.
It wasn't. It was actually the TARDIS. It got that one.
Yeah,
it was 33.65% went to the TARDIS, and the DeLorean got 29.2%. So again, very
close.
What were
close. The other ones?
Wow.
I don't know.
The one from the time machine and
yeah.
It's not that many.
Time
machine.
Well, this is the next one. Who was the best time travel companion? Who would you most like to have with you if you were time travelling?
Doc Brown.
Doctor Who? And Doc Brown didn't even come second.
Well, he's not a companion.
Yeah. Well, he's
companion with me, and I guess that's right.
This result was odd because the second one, I mean,
Edward Furlong in Terminator 2.
No, it was Hermione Granger and a time turner.
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Wow. Okay,
which is weird.
That's a very.
It counts. It's a time travel film.
But why would you pick her as a companion to time travel?
Because people in England. Idiots. Did you watch the Euro election last night? Yeah. Massive fucking wankers.
Yeah. In third place was Spock as well, which I thought would have...
Oh, yeah.
Doc Brown should have come above both of those.
Yeah, definitely.
Two. But it was Doctor Who. When it came down to where would you like to go in your life's time, if you had to go back in time, where do you think most people wanted to go?
Teenage years.
And yeah, and 47.45% of the people thought that Star Wars should never have time travel in. Completely agree with that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Keep it in its own.
Keep it as Star Wars. So yeah, it's some interesting.
That's cool.
Little factoids there from Watch. Check that out on our website.
Nothing like a good time travel story when done correctly.
It seems to be more and more prevalent in today's cinema as well. I mean, we've had Days of Futures Past and Edge of Tomorrow are coming out, which are all time travel themed. So it seems to be a bigger part of sci-fi than perhaps your spaceshipy kind of sci-fi.
It's tough to get right, you know. Mm. Everyone manages it.
Looper was one, but that...
Looper's a good one. Good Terminator one. And Back to the Future, two of the best ones ever. In fact, they may even be the three best time travel films off the top of my head.
Mm.
There will be. If you know any more, let us know.
Mm.
It's leading nicely on to Twitter. It's time for This Week the Geeks Have Spoken. At Popular Outcast, thank you so much for all your reviews. You are the king of the reviews. I think you've reviewed...
Gave a free word review.
12 or 14 films.
Give him a free word review.
Give him a free word review.
For his work.
Awesome film reviewer.
Okay, well, that's good.
There we go. awesome film review, 8 out of 10. 9 out of 10.
Only 8? You got 8 initially.
9 out of 10. It's a 9.
Well, how many does he have to do to get a 10?
Well.
It's always something to work towards.
Exactly.
You're looking to work towards something.
Give him a 10. Where does he go from there?
12.
12 11. Out of 10.
He goes up to 11.
No one goes.
No one's ever made that.
No one's
reference.
Ever made it to 11.
No one's ever made that. Reference.
Ever. Rapture Palooza, pointless cast waster, 6 out of 10. I started watching this. It's Pitch Perfect lady. What's her name? Anna Kendrick.
Yes.
And it's a bizarre film. I turned it off. I didn't make it to the end, so well done for making it to the end. I didn't make any sense of it.
She always has a face like she's got sand in her vagina. I find the same with Eliza Dushku. They're always like, get this sand out. Give me a bottle brush.
I've not quite picked up on that myself.
No, I can't see.
I'm a big fan of those two people.
Ali Larter as well. I like Ali Larter, but she has a lonely face.
And then another one, you Popular Outcast. Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy. Freddy, 4 hours, 6 out of 10. I quite like to watch that. I've not heard of it.
Which one's that one?
It's The Elm Street Legacy. I'm not sure. Is it a documentary?
Documentary or something, yeah.
Because I watched them all back to back quite a few podcasts ago. And I didn't know that existed, so I need to dig that one out. So thank you for those. At Robbie_Polanco said the Clash of the Titans Leo versus Pitt was quite a battle. There's no winners in war. Thanks for a great show, guys.
Well, they were one winner.
There was
the fans.
Yeah, I think that was one of our closest.
It was down to the line on that.
Yeah, if you have any suggestions, anyone out there that for our next Clash of the Titans, do start throwing them to us. We'll be doing one in a few weeks' time, I should think.
Whether director or writer, composer, writer. Mm. Did I say writer twice? Actor,
stunt,
actress,
stuntman.
Stuntman, Muppet,
goats.
Inanimate object, no. At Matt Inkson sent us a YouTube video of the Zelda theme played on wine glasses, pots and beer bottles. That was pretty cool. So thank you for that.
Very good.
At Yuzal put a photo up of Tobey Maguire's different facial expressions from the Spider-Man films and put reasons why they made a new Spider-Man.
And I agree 20,000,000% if that was mathematically possible.
Yep, it is, because we can go to 12 out of 10.
What you're on about. I like his...
pliable face.
I mean,
it's like an animation.
I mean, I love crying ducks. I do. I really do.
Elrides volunteered as a tribute to reenact Bumpy Goose.
Cool.
So we look forward to that.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck.
I have a lot of respect for the hardcore.
Yeah.
Let's get behind the ramblings of a 10-year-old.
Yeah. I expected to be one of those things we did once, got no reciprocation, and went, oh, okay. And I'm sure a lot of our fans are like, oh god, not the Bumpy Goose. there's a select few.
Yeah. There's a devoted.
The diehard followers, Gooses.
Next week.
I'm scared to stop doing it ever.
We're never going to run out.
No. To be fair, though, even if they weren't, I love it. I'm one of them. I think that's why.
Very done. Gooser for life.
It just makes me laugh so much.
We've already discussed that Edgar Wright is off Ant-Man. Are you as good as us? Who, if anyone, should take on the project in your view? At Forrest D. Morgan, Edgar or no one? Anyhow, maybe now he can join Burton in a contemporary At Hammer Films Dracula film, which is bound to happen.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
I could see if you can get someone to restrain Tim Burton, pull him back to what he was a few years ago, and get them to make something good. Hammer, Hammer have come back with like Let Me In and The Quiet Ones is one of the latest ones. At some point, I'm guessing they will go into their back catalogue, and I hope they do, because I'd like to see modernisations of some Hammer stuff. I mean, I watched The Devil Rides Out recently, which is one of the only performances from Christopher Lee where he doesn't play a villain.
Oh,
I bet it's just odd.
It is. He's very Christopher Lee.
He's not a villain in The Wicker Man.
What? Yeah, no.
What?
He just wants to sell his apples.
he's got the good of the town.
Yeah, he's fine.
The needs of the many.
Exactly.
The needs Spock of the policeman. Say,
when Spock says that, everyone's in agreement. Yeah. Christopher Lee does it.
At hardluck_hotel... joined in with Forrest D. Morgan and said, how about Hammer Films presents Edgar Wright's Frankenstein? And then replied, me likes Simon Pegg as Frankenstein and Nick Frost as a monster. I'm in.
Maybe that should be the Cornetto trilogy ending that should have been.
Yeah.
On a serious note, though, him doing Frankenstein would be amazing. Mm. Only, obviously, we had them too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. At Rex Everything 3, just put, no! That's it.
Just on a point one of them made, I don't think it's Edgar or no one. You can still make a commandment, Phil.
Yeah.
But I do share the disappointment.
I think it's just the pizzazz that it'll miss, isn't it? But
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. At Kimberly Kenobi, I don't know who should take over, but I'm gutted. Love the idea of Edgar doing a Marvel movie.
We all did.
That echoes.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah. And Popular Outcasts, I read that Edgar and Joss couldn't see eye to eye on the direction of the film that would have been better in Phase 1. He'd have had more freedom on the film's direction and the final product.
I think that's what I was saying earlier, wasn't it? Like, earlier on, they had a bit more wiggle room.
I don't think it's Joss. It'd be Kevin Feige, not Joss. Joss is obviously in support, based on
that. Yes, But Joss is so big now, isn't he, that they let him kind of steer the overriding direction.
And I also think he's more amiable, because you give him an obstacle to work around, Joss Whedon will try and work around it, because he's worked in TV, and that's all TV is. Like, it's constant challenges and problems. Whereas I think Edgar Wright's not as used to that. And not that he should be, or whatever. Some people are, some people aren't.
Yeah.
I respect Edgar Wright for walking away, to be honest.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So thank you kindly for all your interactions. Send us your 3-word reviews and any other...
Goose-related thing,
anything.
Reviews, Class of Titans. Geese.
Yep.
Through the mail.
Yeah.
Discussion topics.
I need meat, white meat.
White meat.
And discussion topics, questions.
At P.O. Box 3.
Love letters. Yeah. I've not had enough, frankly.
One would be nice.
Yeah, just one cursory word would be lovely.
And if you've enjoyed our show, please do give us a review on iTunes. We are now on Spreaker, so if you use the Spreaker app, then we are on there. Also, as you know, Podcast Land, iTunes or Stitcher. You can find us all over the place.
And if you want to blog on the website.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, get in touch. We are looking for bloggers. Anything geeky, anything that's in our wheelhouse, just get on there and
start bloggering. thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week and we'll have be chatting more stuff. I think Steve might actually bring a Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Well, we live in hope, don't we?
Well, we can, yeah. That was the outro.